Well, howdy there, strangers. I'm Brad.
And I'm Jordy.
And this is Beers with Queers, the true crime podcast where normally I don't know a damn thing about things, but this week...
it happens to be my birthday, so I get to take the week off and Brad is taking over the reins here, and now I'm the one who doesn't know a damn thing about it.
So this week, I'm actually going to be talking about a case that got a lot of media coverage. Have you ever heard of the Jenny Jones Show, Jordy?
I've heard of it. It was a little before my time, but I've heard mentions of it on the internet.
Yeah, Jordy's a youngin, so this is a story that happens back in 1995, so he would be a little bit young for it. But I think there's a lot of people out there that's going to know. We're going to be talking about a story of an episode of trash talk TV that went horribly wrong and ended up with someone being murdered.
So I think I know the case you're talking about. And also to mention the 1995 thing, 2 years before I was born in 1997. And this week is actually my 27th birthday, so I'm getting up there. But I have, I think, heard mentions of the case you're about to mention because it is such a wild story. So I am very interested to hear the full details of it because I really only know pretty much the basic surface level stuff of it.
Well, I'm going to kick off the episode by saying happy birthday, Jordy.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I hope you enjoy this special episode that I put together for you.
I'm excited. I'm always excited when Brad does it. I'm always really excited when Brad gets really into it and gets really into like doing the episodes and stuff because like, when he told me at the beginning of the week, because I was like, you know, I got to finish writing next week's episode. And he was like, well, I'm almost finished writing an episode. And so he's been texting me throughout the week, like as he's writing, and he's like, I'm really excited to present it. I'm like learning so much. I'm fascinated by all the things I'm finding. And I was like, I really enjoy it. And I think the listeners also really enjoy it when you get into it. And yeah, everyone always loves the episodes Brad hosts. So I'm glad we're starting to see a little bit more of it.
Yeah, and I have to admit, like, I started out kind of like delving into this, and then I got really into it the more that I read on it and researched on it. And we're going to have a lot of audio clips in this episode because I kind of went full in with it. So let's just go ahead and kick it off. The year 1995 witnessed a horrific event that transcended the realm of tabloid headlines and plunged into the depths of social anxieties. The murder of Scott Amador, a young man thrust into the national spotlight by a talk show appearance, exposed the dangerous intersection of media exploitation, homophobia, and the gay panic defense.
I'm already into it just from that opening, because I see, like me, you like to stretch your writing muscles there, so I'm already hooked.
Which of these ways would you choose to reveal your secret crush on someone? A, would you write that person a letter? B, would you tell the person in private in case he rejects you? Or C, would you tell that person that you're gay and you hope he is on national television?
So Scott Amador, a bartender in Michigan, appeared on an episode of The Jenny Jones Show entitled Secret Crushes, to reveal his romantic feelings for an acquaintance named Jonathan Schmitz. Amador met Schmitz through a mutual friend, Donna Riley, who lived in the same apartment complex as Schmitz. And the way they met that Schmitz was working on Donna's brother's car, and he actually was like up underneath the car. And so Amador walked up, saw like some hot legs sticking out from under this car, and just couldn't wait to see what come out. And when he did come out, the crush started.
And I think that's something you see in like every 80s teen rom-com where it's got like the big male lead and all you see is the lower half, and then they push back on those little wheelie things mechanics use, and it's like, oh, well, how do you do?
And you'll see Schmitz is a really cute guy. So Jenny begins by asking Amador about any fantasies he has had about Schmitz.
Okay, you think about you. You have fantasies about him?
I've had a couple, yeah.
Yeah, you had one. You had when he was under the car. You had a fantasy about him.
Yeah, something to do with like brake oil line snapping and.
Tell us yeah. about. You have another one that involved. You're in a hammock or something. Tell us about that fantasy.
Yeah, actually, I got a pretty big hammock in my yard, and I just, yeah, I thought about tying him up to my hammock.
And?
Well, it entails, like, whipped cream and champagne, stuff like that.
Now, if you watch the video, you can tell that Amador is a bit uncomfortable when he's talking about these fantasies. Of course, Jenny's, you know, egging him on and everything like that, and they said before the show, make it good. And so you can tell that he's hesitant about talking about this stuff. But, of course, he signed up to be on national TV, so he's going to do his best and everything.
And trash TV on top of that. I've seen this clip. That's about all I've seen of the Jenny Jones show. But, I mean, I have a feeling it's probably kind of in the same vein as, like, Jerry Springer, maybe.
Yeah. So Nandi's talk shows were like very sensationalized, very trashy. You know, that's when we had like the Maury Povich show, like exposing you're not the father or you are the father. Everything had a lot of like shock value to it, and shock meant ratings back then. So every show is trying to do their best to pull some shock value out of everything.
And this is also before, you know, gay stuff started getting like just normalized in the media. And so,
yeah, remember, this is in the 90s, and actually, you know, we're going to go into this case actually changed some things after this happened. So, and then Jenny asked if Donna and Amador know Schmitz's sexual status.
John, he knows you're gay, right?
Yeah.
Do you know that he is?
No.
Anything's possible.
You hope. Do you have any reason to think he is, Donna? I mean,
not really. He said that his family kind of questioned him on it. He's a very open person, so it really wouldn't surprise me.
So, Jordy, have you ever had a crush on a straight or status unknown guy and fantasized about revealing your crush, and they reciprocate, and you both run off into the sunset together?
Of course, and I think that is a fantasy that a lot of gay men, especially gay men that grow up in more rural areas, have, is there's always that some super uber straight dude that like the neighbor or the mechanic or the cute cashier boy at the supermarket. And you always have those little fantasies, like every time you think of him, he's like, well, you never know. What if I did reveal my crush? And they're like, I feel the same way. And then you guys live happily ever after. It's a little bit of grand feelings of grandeur there, but hey, you know what? Sometimes that's all we got is our fantasies of and crushes on straight men.
Yeah, I think it's a very common for most gay people to go through that. I see with Amador here, he has this huge crush on Schmitz, and he has this very grandiose plan to reveal his crush on TV in front of a live studio audience, and at some point in front of the nation. Because remember, this can be televised across the nation. So one, I think he has to be very secure in his sexuality. And two, he has to be very brave to do this on TV. I mean, this is the 90s, and to be openly gay was a much harder thing than it is today. So I think he has what I like to call crush brain. Crush brain, let me try to explain that to you. I'm going to ask you again, Jordy. Have you ever had a crush on someone and found yourself trying to show off to them and you do awkward stuff or you say something that you look back and you just like totally facepalm yourself because looking back on it, it's very awkward?
Yeah, and that's another thing too is I think especially when you have like those uber straight crushes, you have a tendency to act a little bit more masculine and straight presenting. You know, maybe Google what his favorite football team is or baseball or whatever sport he watches And then that way you have something to actually talk to him about. And of course, I think that extends to every person that has a crush. Like, when you first start going after someone or fancying somebody, you always, that little part of you that tries to assimilate yourself to be just like them, because it's like, oh, the more interested we have in common, the more likely they are to fall in love with me. And so that can really lead to you not being the most genuine version of yourself. And I think that is, again, something we can all relate to.
Yeah. And again, I think here, this coming on TV and everything seems like a very grandiose gesture. And he's going to confess his love. And I'm sure the highly romantic and very irrational side of his brain is screaming, how could he say no? I mean, this is a big thing that he's doing right here. So I'm going to play a clip here where you can just kind of tell this guy is in major crush brain.
Give us a physical, before he comes out, give us a physical description. How, what is it that's so exciting about him to you?
He's got a cute little hard body. you know, when you just want to pick up and put in your Curio cabinet, you know, dust him off once in a while.
You want to physically pick him up?
Oh, he's just a tiny little cute thing. He's gorgeous.
Now it's time for the big moment. It's time to bring Schmitz out to meet his new secret crush. Now, Jordy, I'm going to play this for you, and I want you to tell me how you perceive his reaction.
Okay, well, get the headphones off of John, and let's have John come out here and see who has the crush on him. Here's John. Crush on you?
Did I? No, we're good friends.
Well, guess what? It's Scott that has the crush on you.
You lied to me. Interesting. Very interesting.
So basically, it's Donna and Scott on a stage on Jenny Jones, and the whole theme of the episode is secret admirers and crushes. And of course, after Scott admits all this about Jonathan, they bring Jonathan on stage, and he has no idea what has just been said. So he is completely in the dark here. All he knows is that someone on that stage has a crush on him. Of course, Jenny's like, oh, you think it's maybe Donna because she's the only woman on stage? And then, honestly, I'm kind of surprised at how quickly they revealed it, because normally they try to build up to it. Like, the few talk shows I have seen, it's usually like a few questions to the person that's in the dark. And so I felt like they would have, like, egged him on a little bit, like, oh, what do you think of Scott and all that, yada, yada. But, like, as soon as they brought him out, like, right off the bat, Jenny was like, Scott's the one that has the crush on you. And so kind of whiplash. But surprisingly, at first, it looked like Jonathan took it pretty well because he was laughing and smiling and clapping. So I don't know if it was just disbelief or just didn't want to cause a scene in front of an audience. I don't know, but it did seem really weird.
So I'm going to give you my interpretation of it. There's a lot of it that overlaps. So firstly, you can tell that Jonathan is not having any of this. He shakes Amador's hand when he comes out, but when Amador goes in for a hug, Schmitz holds on to Amador's hand and turns his shoulder into him, making this very awkward. Like, they don't hug. Like, Scott tries to hug Jonathan, but he doesn't really get to. And I think that was at the point Schmitz knew something was up.
I did notice that too. It did seem a little awkward. It's kind of like when those catch blink and you'll miss it moments. But yeah, he did, like, went for a very, he like kissed Donna on the cheek and hugged her, gave Scott a very formal handshake. And then when Scott tried to go in for the hug, Jonathan was kind of like, nope.
Yeah. And then when Jenny asked him if he thought his secret crush was Donna, before he even gets the answer, she says, well, guess what? It's Scott. He's the one who has the crush on you. And Schmitz, of course, assumed his crush was a female. And he appears surprised, and he lets out a laugh. But that laugh could be interpreted multiple ways. Nervousness, amusement, or disbelief. This is when Jenny delivers the 1-2 punch and has Schmitz watch Amador talk about his sexual fantasies about him. So as the details of Amador's fantasies are revealed, Schmitz seems increasingly flustered and covers his face with his hands in embarrassment. In the end, Schmitz maintains he's a heterosexual and reiterates that he's not interested in Amador romantically, though he does find the confession flattering. After the taping, Schmitz put on a nice face and even drove Donna and Amador back from the airport, completely hiding the fact that the whole event had humiliated him and enraged him.
I can totally get the humiliation part, because it was really kind of crappy on the show's part to kind of set this whole thing up. Again, this is the 90s. We hope people are not homophobic, but you'll never know how someone's going to react to being confronted like that, especially on live TV. And so it was a very sleazy situation all around, I feel, and very much exploitative on Jenny Jones' part. Very much, I can see the producers are like, we have an openly gay guy. He's very open about his sexual fantasies and with his crush on his straight redneck friend. And like, it's going to be such an awesome episode. Like, bring this guy, this straight dude on and have this gay guy confess his feelings for him. You know, maybe he'll blow up or something like that. I can just see, like, very much no thought to how this actually will affect not only Scott, but Jonathan as well, like mentally or even when the episode airs. And so it's really very, it just feels dirty, honestly.
It is dirty. I mean, the show knew that Schmitz was going to think that his secret admirer was a female.
Yeah, false pretenses too. Like, of course he's going to go on there. They have a secret crush on you. And it's like, oh, well, I'm assuming a girl or somebody, if it's enough to get me on national television.
And actually, to go a little bit deeper into that, they, when Schmitz was approached to be on the show, they said, hey, it could be a man or a woman that gives you. And he said, if it's a man, I don't want to have anything to do with it. And they were like, well, it could be a man or a woman. And he's like, if it's a man, I don't want to have anything to do with it. And they're like, well, don't worry about it. Kind of like, don't worry about it. It's not going to be a man. But of course it was a man, because that's where all the shock value comes from.
And that's a lot you see in a lot of those talk shows, I feel, around that time, is obviously queer people in general were very much seen as like sideshow attractions and like ratings, trashy reality TV show ratings. Because the one thing like I remember the most from Jerry Springer or Maury is when they would have gay people on or trans people on, and just the way they would talk to them and stuff like that. So very much not thinking about the person or the actual repercussions of once the show ends, and very much just, this is gold. This is quality TV gold.
Yeah, and again, this is the 90s, and gay people in general are kind of shocking to the normal public. Like, you know, everybody's like, oh, wow, gay, I don't understand that. Because back in the 90s, again, most people weren't exposed to it, except in situations like where it's on these talk shows, and they would have like an episode where like a boyfriend tells his like girlfriend or wife that he's gay, and everybody in the audience is shocked. Like, wow, a real gay person. It's like gay zoo.
And also, I think it's, they're not used to, this is around the time of the don't ask, don't tell, like, policy. And so I think that's another thing, is just shocking general audiences by having very open and proud gay people on these talk shows that are very much open about their sexuality, their the sex they have, their fantasies and stuff like that. And of course, a lot of people back then were like, it's okay if you're gay, just don't put it in my face, or like keep it behind closed doors. And so to have them on national television talking about it was very much, you know,
it was not the norm.
It was not the norm.
So a couple of days after taping, Amador left a letter on Schmitz's doorstep with a flashing light attached to it that said, if you want to turn this off, you'll have to use a tool, and it takes a special tool. Now, I know what people must be asking, why would he leave this note after what happened? I think, again, this is that crush brain. Schmitz being straight and not interested just doesn't fit into Amador's fantasy. So I could see him thinking, maybe Schmitz just said he was straight because he was asked in front of a public live audience. And maybe things would have been different if it had been done privately. Also, I'm sure Schmidt's driving them home after the taping and being Mr. Nice Guy along that way left Amador with some mixed signals. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I think he has this huge crush and you just want it to turn out good for you. So he tried one more time and left this note for him. So upon finding the note, Schmitz flew into a frenzy. He didn't own a gun, so he immediately left, drove to the bank, and withdrew enough money to go and buy a shotgun. He then drove and confronted Amador at his mobile home. Details about the exact interaction are unclear. Some reports suggest Amador may have smiled when asked about leaving the note on Schmitz's door, and this was interpreted by Schmitz as an admission of doing it. Schmitz then returned to his car, retrieved the shotgun, and shot Amador in the chest, and then once again in the chest as he lay on the floor dying. So right here, when I think about premeditated killing, a few things stand out to me. One, he drove to the bank to withdraw money to buy a gun. So he's going to the bank specifically to withdraw money to get a murder weapon. He then drove and bought the gun. So he's got time to think about it while he's driving to go buy this gun. And three, he didn't shoot Amador right away. He confronted him, then he had to go back to his car, retrieve the gun, come back, and then shoot him. So along that path, I'm like, you've got plenty of opportunities to be thinking about what you're doing.
That's premeditated murder. So, I mean, you can't even use the excuse of, like, temporary insanity or anything like that. That was cold and calculated.
Yeah, to me, this doesn't seem like a person that has lost their mind to rage. This man has decided to do this, and he's went through all of these steps to do it. After the shooting, Schmitz drove to a nearby gas station and immediately called 911 to report the killing. Now, Schmitz is really hard to understand through most of the call, but in the beginning, you hear him say, "I just shot this guy," and the 911 operator responds saying, "Okay, why did you do that?" To which Schmitz responds, because he effing picked me on national TV and he's a homosexual. Schmitz was arrested soon after and charged with first-degree murder. Care to guess what defense his team decided to go with in the trial, Jordy?
So, I have a strong hankering suspicion that it's probably going to be the tried and true gay panic defense.
That's right. Schmitz's defense hinged on the controversial gay panic defense. The legal tactic argued that an unwanted homosexual advance could be a mitigating factor in a murder case. It essentially normalizes violence as a response to same-sex attraction, perpetrating deep-seated homophobia within the legal system. The jury ultimately convicted Schmitz of second-degree murder, rejecting the notion that Amador's feelings justified his death. However, the very existence of the gay panic defense exposed the social prejudice against homosexuality that allowed such a defense to exist. And this case in particular helped bring light to this prejudice, helping the gay panic defense to fall out of favor as a viable defense. So finally, we've got a case where people's like, okay, this gay panic thing, it was cool a while back, but now, yeah, you murdered him. But, you know, I had to look at it. I was like, yeah, they rejected the gay panic defense, but why did he get second-degree murder? So I dove into that. So the reason he got second-degree murder was because his defense presented evidence of Schmitz's mental health struggles, including bipolar disorder and Graves' disease. This could have argued against Schmitz having a clear and deliberate state of mind needed for first-degree murder. And although the jury rejected the gay panic defense for the first-degree murder, I have to wonder what role it played in justifying a second-degree murder conviction. Like, you know, they're like, yeah, you really shouldn't have killed this guy, but I can kind of understand it.
So, and again, I think that goes back to the prejudice of the time. Again, the 90s, gay people, homosexual man, not only making quote unquote advances towards you, but on national TV. And of course, that was the basis for the gay panic defense for almost 50 years up to that point. So it's like adding a whole nother layer to it where it's like on national TV, yeah, we're not going to convict you. We're not going to let you off on the gay panic defense because that would allow that to be used in future cases to get people off. And I don't think the public would like that very much. So we're just going to convict you of second degree murder. But we think you were justified in it because, of course, a homosexual man drove you crazy because he admitted he had a crush on you. You know, make it make sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard for them to say. In the 90s, things were starting to shift just a little bit. I mean, just a little bit. Like, and at that time, it's harder for people to say, yeah, it was all right to kill him because he was a homosexual. They would kind of take that and hide it in a like a velvet glove and be like, here's all the reasons why you are a murderer and everything, but let's give you a second degree murder, you know.
And it's kind of just a more fancy way of saying like temporary insanity. It's kind of temporary insanity by homosexuality, essentially. And I know, like, they try to justify, like, oh, like, he already had existing mental disorders or illnesses or struggles. And, of course, the stigma of homosexuality was what drove him insane because someone who was a homosexual dared somehow advance towards him, and he felt threatened. Threatened enough to go get money, to go get a gun, to then drive back, confirm that, like, hey, you did leave me a note, and then go back and get the gun, and then come back and kill them. He felt very threatened, so he had to, of course he had to kill him.
Yeah, to me, I mean, again, I had to really dive deep to find why he got second-degree murder, because I was like, this definitely seems premeditated to me. So Jonathan Schmitz was sentenced to 25 to 50 years in prison. Ultimately, Schmitz served over 20 years before being released on parole in August 2017. Schmitz was 47 years old at the time of his parole.
Honestly, I'm surprised he got 20 years. I knew some of the basic facts of this case, but and like I knew he got off, he got out eventually. But for some reason, I felt like he would get out much sooner than that, especially with all the, you know, gay panic defense, yada yada surrounding it. So I'm very shocked that he even got 20 years.
Yeah, me too, honestly. Beyond the murder itself, the Amador family sued the Jenny Jones Show.
Good.
They argued that the show's exploitive manipulation of Amador's emotions directly contributed to the violence. The case raised crucial questions about media responsibility. Did the show's sensationalized approach create an environment where the violence seemed like a possible outcome? And, you know, watching that myself, you can see what a very uncomfortable and very humiliating position they were putting kind of everybody in, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the Jenny Jones Show was directly responsible, but I definitely feel like it did not do any favors to the situation. And, of course, we can sit here all day and argue what could have, what woulda, shoulda. But I think they set out intentionally. They knew they were going to get a reaction out of this straight man being confronted by a gay man on national television. They knew it was going to be negative. They knew he had the potential to blow up. Actually, they were honestly probably hoping he blew up on camera. That way they had an even better episode. And so I think that just really shows you the darker side to all these sleazy talk shows during this time period. You know, Jenny Jones, Jerry Springer, Maury. It wasn't so much about even caring about like the mental health or the repercussions after the show of these people. It was literally all about what can we do and how can we manipulate the situation to make it as explosive as humanly possible and just F who cares what the actual real world consequences will be after the show. And yeah, so.
Yeah, and I didn't really go into it, but Jenny Jones was actually brought into the trial. She had to testify at the trial because the defense was you know, bringing this up, they're like, hey, you basically set this up to happen. And, you know, Jenny Jones is like, I don't know what you're talking about, you know, and he seemed like everything was fine. And, you know, this episode actually never aired because, I mean, Scott was killed 3 days after the taping. As soon as the Jenny Jones show heard about this, they went into, like, lockdown mode.
Of course.
They pulled the episode. It never aired. They even, like, sent out a video that, you know, where they talked and said, hey, this is all Jonathan Smith's. This is not us, you know, and everything like that. But, of course, you know, like, during the trial, they're like, hey, you really set this up. But ultimately, you know, it's like the prosecution said, this is not the trial of Jenny Jones. This is the trial of Jonathan Schmitz and his murder of this man.
Yeah, no, I mean, Jenny Jones was she did ethical? No.
No, but ethics did not play into 90s talk show.
No, that was not the climate back then. And honestly, just going back and even like reliving the memories in my mind now, thinking of like, because I grew up watching Jerry Springer and Maury when I was like 4 or 5. And that should, you know, tell you how I grew up. But just even thinking back to the episodes I remember, it was just so exploitative is the only word you can use to describe it, because it would take these people at their most vulnerable or their lowest point, and literally it would be like sticking the knife in and then just twisting it as much as they could to see what kind of reaction they'd get. And so, you know, Jenny Jones is, again, from what I've seen, no different than Jerry or Maury. But, yeah, she's not ethical, which none of them were. But, again, she's not the one that shot a man. That is all Jonathan. He can try and justify as being caused by her until he's blue in the face. But in the end, he was a grown-ass man. He was the one that had the forethought to that he needed to get money, get a gun, come back and kill this guy he's been friends with for, you know, so long now.
Well, you know, they kind of play it off like they were friends and everything, but really they were only acquaintances. They didn't really know each other. You know, like when you go back and you really look at the thing, they didn't know each other well. Like, it's kind of one of those things where Scott had a crush, told Donna about it, and Donna done her best to try to put the two of them together. Because it's kind of that, you know, how straight people do, put the two gay people together and they'll mate, you know.
But that's the thing, too, is like, if Donna knew Jonathan, was she not aware that he was straight? I mean, and that's the thing, too.
You know, that goes back to that video I show, and it's kind of like, they're like, yeah, there's nothing that tells us that he's gay, but there's nothing that tells us that he's straight either. But honestly, so Schmitz had been engaged to a woman for almost 4 years prior to this happening. And I think, honestly, when he went on the show, he was either expecting it to be just a random woman that had a crush on him, but I think he really expected it to be this fiance that he had. Kind of something had happened, they had fell apart, and you know, from listening to some of the clips and listening to his defense and everything, he was kind of like expecting it to be a woman, of course, really kind of hoping it was this woman in particular, and he was like, I'm gonna marry her this time. So, you know, all as bad as it was for Scott to be telling this crush and it not be reciprocated, it was also like a big blow to Jonathan Schmitz as well. And also embarrassing because, again, it was made to be embarrassing because this was a man having a crush on another man.
Well, that's even worse, actually. If Donna knew it or she told producers that, you know, Jonathan had been engaged to a woman before.
I don't think Donna knew that either. Okay. The thing is, I know Donna and Scott were friends, and Schmitz was a friend of Donna's, but I don't know how close of a friend they were. You know, she had said he had talked a little bit about it, and he had actually talked like about his family had kind of asked him if he might be gay, but the way that Jonathan told that to her is not exactly how it came out at the trial, because at the trial, it came out that his dad was actually kind of an abusive guy and everything. Of course, like, these guys are pulling out every defense. He had an abusive father and everything. But, like, his father, like, actually kind of, like, confronted him about being a homosexual. And so this triggered those emotions in him again and led partly to him killing. You know, this is what the defense is saying. So there's, like, a lot of layers. And, again, I think that's what this talk show didn't take into consideration. They just wanted this, like, you know, flash of emotion, embarrassment or whatever. But, like, there is, like, deep-seated, like, emotional issues, psychological issues, and everything that could lead to exactly what happened. You know, you might have do this to, like, 10 people, and none of them, everything's fine, but one person has that right mixture that's going to set them off and cause something like this.
Yeah, so that's fair. Like, obviously, we don't know who knew how much of what situation. It is one of those nuanced situations, this shitty situation, especially with Jonathan's father being abusive and using homophobic slurs and being gay as a bad thing. And so it seems very obvious that being gay was hammered into his head from a young age, that one of the worst things you can be is a queer. And obviously that does not justify at all what he did, but it kind of makes it even more worse that they brought him on a national television show and put him in this, I guess, quote unquote, gay situation. Even though he isn't gay and it's a gay guy that has feelings for him, I guess he could get the feeling like, I'm still associated with a gay man, which again falls back on the show producers, because they were fully aware that a straight man was more than likely not going to react well to a gay man coming out to him on national television.
I think that's the whole point of this episode. So I will say this was the third set of people they brought on for the Secret Crush episode. So there was two other people that went through this very same thing before Jonathan. But, you know, again, like I said, they might not have had the mixture of emotional trouble, psychological issues that would lead to murder. The show didn't care. They didn't screen anybody. They didn't ask a lot of questions. In fact, they said that they had put vodka in the green room for Jonathan to have prior to the show.
Again, that just makes it worse. You're just digging your grave further, Jenny, because on top of an already volatile situation, you throw alcohol into it and literally... I mean, I don't care saying it because you can't deny. They very much were hoping this man, they would get a very intense reaction out of this man. Like, even if he wouldn't do it sober, maybe he'll do it drunk. So we'll give him alcohol. And so that just makes it even worse and such a more crappy situation, because at the end of the day, they were literally just like, it's going to be so funny, and it's going to, like, everyone at home is going to love seeing this gay man pour his heart out to this guy he has a crush on, and then this straight dude who may or may not be drunk off the alcohol we gave him will cause this huge scene or blow up or something. And
or, you know, what people think, once a guy gets a little bit of alcohol in him, he's a lot more gay.
Or that, or maybe he will reciprocate the feelings. Either way, they were hoping for a very exploitative moment that they would milk the crap out of for ratings. And of course, we already see the second they heard that something bad or negative was related to the story, they're like, actually, we have nothing to do with it. I'm like, we don't want anything to do with it. But if it had been a different reaction, they would have been like, oh yeah, that was all our doing. That was the Jenny Jones show.
Yeah, and ultimately this lawsuit was unsuccessful that the Amador family brought up against the Jenny Jones show. But it forced the conversation about the power and potential dangers of manipulating people on television for entertainment purposes. This examination had a significant impact on the other talk shows, particularly those relying on sensational content and audience humiliation. The high-profile case sparked public outrage and raised concern about the ethics of talk shows that exploited guests for ratings. Lawsuits against the Jenny Jones Show further pressured the industry to become more responsible in screening guests and topics, and talk shows faced increased scrutiny from regulatory bodies and broadcast networks. So, you know, that did lead to this, as well as pre-screening of guests and psychological evaluations became more common to avoid putting vulnerable people at risk. The story of Scott Amador's tragic death is more than just a sensationalized news story. It's a cautionary tale about the power of media, the dangers of prejudice, and the importance of fighting for a world where everyone feels safe to be themselves. It's a story that deserves to be remembered, not just for its horrific outcome, but also for the conversations it sparked and the progress it helped to inspire.
Yeah, that case really pissed me off with the Jenny Jones Show. And honestly, like, this whole episode, since we've been talking about it, on top of all this, I've been, like, thinking in my head, reliving all the, like, very problematic stuff, especially towards queer people that I remember watching, like Maury or Jerry. There is probably a very famous quote from Maury that you've heard your friend say or you've said, and that's, "Oh, that's a man, Maury." And that quote was because they constantly had on trans people, and one of the most famous things that he or his guests or the audience would say is, "Oh, that's obviously a man, Maury." Again, very much poking fun of and gawking at queer people or people that are different, and just kind of using them as like a publicity zoo to be like, "Oh yeah, we bring on all these weird people and it's just a trans person." And so I think, again, this adds to it, and this is just the extreme example of why that is so dangerous and why that can be so just toxic to everyone. Because you don't think, especially, and I mean, I've been guilty of it before, watching in the past, like enjoying trashy reality TV, especially those talk shows, and seeing like them fight and get really trashy. But you don't really think what happens after the cameras stop rolling, because these are still people with emotions and feelings and illnesses, and they still have to deal with that. And not only do they have to deal with it, now they have the added pressure knowing that millions of people all over the world saw their dirty laundry aired out on TV, and I can't imagine how much worse that makes that feeling.
Yeah, those people have to go home after this. They have to go back to their small community that's going to find out that you were on TV, and everybody in that community is going to watch that episode, I assure you.
Because people talk, and if they don't talk to your face, they're going to talk behind your back. And especially when you add alcohol to it, like, it's just one of those things. I'm glad there's more regulations and stuff now, but it was a lawless land back then from the sounds of it, just like supplying alcohol to all these very emotionally vulnerable people and then literally just going, have at it.
Yeah, and the way they done it, the alcohol was in there and they could get the alcohol if they wanted to, because that came up in the trial too. They're like, did you give them alcohol? And they're like, well, there was alcohol for them, but we didn't make them drink it or anything like that. So, the real thing is, the big thing is, so this case finally came to court TV, and no one had seen the episode of this Jenny Jones Show until it was aired on court TV, and it was just playing in the background because they showed the episode that had never been seen, because the Jenny Jones Show, like, buried this episode.
Oh, of course.
So when court TV, which they showed this not too long ago on court TV, you know, like in the past few years. So this episode was literally lost up until this point. So, you know, going back, and you can kind of like watch stuff from the actual episode now, and just see just how exploitive it is to these people.
Yeah, so thankfully the Jenny Show is gone, and this is just a sad and tragic case all around, I feel like, and it's just a classic example of vulnerable people being exploited. And thankfully, we now have regulations and laws protecting people like that. Because, you know, we still enjoy our good trash TV, but as long as we have more protections in place to watch for people like that, hopefully nothing like this ever happens again. And I guess with that, anything else to add, Brad?
Just again, happy birthday, Jordy. I hope you enjoyed your episode.
I did. This was a very informative episode. Always love when Brad takes over the podcast. I know a lot of listeners love it when Brad takes over the podcast. Love seeing him get into it. Hopefully you guys got really into it. I know I did. And so, yeah, hope you guys have a wonderful week. I'm going to be celebrating my 27th birthday and
at Horror Hound Weekend in Cincinnati.
At Horror Hound Weekend in Cincinnati. And so this episode will come out after that. But we will see you guys back Monday. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a 5-star review. If you want to give me a birthday gift, the best gift you can possibly ever give me is leave our podcast a 5-star rating or review on iTunes or Spotify. Helps us out a lot, helps other people discover the podcast.
And I will say, I've actually went and read these like reviews and people have left, and like it is a really big thing to get a review from you guys, and it makes me feel proud that there's so many people out there that are enjoying the show. And if you don't see it, you don't know it. So seeing those actually, beyond it like spreading the podcast and everything, it's just kind of like a sense of pride thing for us.
Yeah, I love it. It makes it giddy. It makes it, you know, more like every time I do, I get really excited to release the next episode for you guys. And so, yeah, leave us a 5-star rating or review. Hopefully it's good. I'm not going to say it has to be good, but hopefully it is. And if you want to see photos from this case, you can follow us on Instagram at Beers with Queers Pod, that's P-O-D, or on Facebook at Beers with Queers, a true crime podcast. And until Monday, stay dangerous out there, my friend.
See you guys soon.
Bye.